A logging project has been blocked in the Kootenai National Forest, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. Good evening, I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. Federal road and transit fundings are expected to dwindle starting next month, and Flathead reporter Katrin Fry continues her series on unemployment in the Flathead.
A federal judge has blocked a logging project in the Kootenai National Forest over concerns that roads built for the project may harm a threatened population of grizzly bears. In approving the 36,600-acre Pilgrim Project, the U.S. Forest Service called for installing gates on some of the planned roads that would allow for future access. U.S. District Judge Diana Christensen ruled yesterday the forest management plan requires officials to permanently close the roads once the logging project is complete, or else close other roads in the area. Christensen blocked the project until the Forest Service comes up with a plan for no net increase in road miles. The area is adjacent to one of the struggling Cabinet Yak grizzly populations. The Alliance for the Wild Rockies sued the Forest Service over the project last year.
In other news from around the state, the Montana Department of Transportation cautiously continues its planned summer road construction and maintenance projects with the knowledge that the federal government will start reducing road payments next month. MDOT Transportation Planning Administrator Lynn Zanto says Montana has received about $400 million in federal funding to bankroll over 200 road projects. The state of Montana provides matching funds totaling 13%. The Federal Highway Trust Fund is the primary revenue source for maintaining and building the nation's highway systems. It's primarily supported by the 18.4 cent per gallon gas tax and is set to go insolvent next month. As Zanto puts it, the needs of the nation's highway system are greater than its supporting revenue source can support.
Probably multiple factors contribute, but the current tax rate has been the same since 1993, and a whole lot of compounding effects could be more efficient fuel and primarily just the needs growing in terms of an aging infrastructure.
And there's little appetite in Congress to raise the gas tax.
We have received notice from Federal Highway Administration that they will slow down the reimbursement rate. The Federal Highway Program, it operates on a reimbursement basis. So we extend the funds and we request reimbursements. So they will only be able to pay us, they say, starting August 1st, our share, which is 1.04% of the national program, of the cash that's actually available.
Zanto says that will have on-the-ground repercussions here in Montana.
Immediate impact, we are moving our program forward. We do manage our program to keep a cash balance in our state fund to allow us to deal with fluctuations like this. So short-term, we'll be diligently managing our cash. Long-term, it could mean delay of projects and inability to advance new projects. But our primary focus immediately will be to make sure we are paying contractors for the work that we've contracted.
Zanto says her colleagues at MDOT will be paying close attention to upcoming highway funding debates in Congress and adjust the department's construction schedule as necessary.
Glacier National Park officials said today they expect the 50-mile stretch of the Going to the Sun Road to be open in time for the 4th of July weekend, but it's too early to say exactly which day. Public Affairs Officer Jennifer Lutman says vehicle access through Logan Pass was delayed because of a major winter storm that struck the area 2 weeks ago, causing snow slides up to 15 feet deep along the road.
Well, it brought a lot more snow onto the road, debris or avalanches along the road. So areas of the road that were plowed needed to be replowed, and so that took time and a lot of effort for the road crews. And then there's over 400 removable guardrails that need to be installed each spring as well, and some of the guardrails sustained some damage during the weather we had a couple weeks ago, so those need to be replaced. So we've got a little bit of more work to do.
The road is the only major route in the park that stretches across the Continental Divide through Logan Pass, which is 6,646 feet above sea level. Its tight turns through the Rocky Mountains connect travelers to the east and west ends of the park. Trail and campground staff are assisting road crews in sweeping away small pockets of snow and debris off the road, as well as preparing the Logan Pass Visitor Center by cleaning facilities and testing water to make sure it's safe to drink. Hikers and bikers have been able to access the west side of the road from the Apgar Visitor Center to the top trail near Logan Pass since mid-May, but road construction on the east side of the road continues to prevent all visitor access. The weather delay has allowed park officials to start a shuttle service on the west side of the park earlier than expected.
We have several permanent positions here at Glacier National Park that are vacant, and so that does allow us to save some money, which allowed us to implement the shuttle system earlier than we thought would be available this year. And it was scheduled to begin July 1, but we began a little earlier than that this year.
The latest on the Going to the Sun Road, the latest that the Going to the Sun Road has ever been opened was in 2011 when the road crews weren't able to clear the so-called Big Drift out of Logan Pass until July 11th. According to National Park Service report, visitors spent more than $172 million in communities in and around Glacier National Park in 2012.
State wildlife officials are looking for information about who introduced northern pike into Lake Mary Ronan, which is being managed as a salmon and trout fishery. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Information Officer John Fraley says a Missoula angler caught two northern pike at the lake west of Flathead on June 26th. FWP Warden Ron Howell said these are the first northern pike reported in the lake, so he assumes they were illegally introduced. Northern pike are predatory and could impact the Kokanee salmon and trout fishery. Kokanee and Lake Mary Ronan serve as the egg source for stocking lakes across the state. Anyone with information is asked to call 1-800-TIP-MONT, that's 847-6668, and anyone who catches a northern pike at Lake Mary Ronan is asked to call Fish, Wildlife, and Parks at 406-752-5501.
Wild horse advocates have dropped a lawsuit challenging roundups at a wildlife refuge on the Nevada-California line after federal officials severed ties with a contractor that critics claims were allowing the Mustangs that were gathered to be sold for slaughter. Bonnie Kohlreiter and Laura Lay of the Nevada-based group Wild Horse Education said a lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court in Reno, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, couldn't account for the majority of the 140 horses J&S advocates of Mississippi rounded up last fall from the Sheldon National Wildlife Refuge. They were scheduled to go before Judge Miranda Due today, but confirmed before a status hearing that they were dropping the case after the service notified J&S on June 23rd its contract had been terminated.
A Bozeman man who was charged with trying to rape a former girlfriend in February and then escaping from police custody for 3 weeks now faces a drug charge. Today, Gallatin County prosecutors charged 28-year-old Kevin Anthony Briggs with criminal possession of dangerous drugs. County Attorney Marty Lambert says a syringe found in Briggs' backpack had traces of a drug called Edazolam, which has amnesiac, hypnotic, and sedative effects. Court records say the drug also was found in body fluid samples taken from the woman Briggs is charged with sexually assaulting. The woman told investigators she passed out after Briggs made her a smoothie. Briggs faces five other felony charges: attempted sexual intercourse without consent, aggravated assault, assault on a peace officer, escape, and failure to register as a sexual offender while he was on the run.
A 17-year-old Haver boy is charged with raping a girl, and he and his father are charged with witness tampering for allegedly trying to prevent her from going to the police. The boy and his father pleaded not guilty yesterday during hearings before a district court judge in Haver. The Associated Press is not identifying the father to avoid identifying the teen, who is a juvenile. The girl said she was raped at the boy's residence on April 15th. She said he threatened to kill her dog and grabbed her arm at school and told her not to report it. Prosecutors say the boy's father texted the girl, asking her not to tell her father or police. The boy's attorney says he's looking forward to clearing his client's name. The father's attorney was out of the office.
Businesses are hiring, and construction across the greater Flathead has been picking up, but many are still heading east and sending money home. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry continues a look at the Flathead workforce with a story of one Western Montana's contractor's Bakken commute.
Kramer Enterprises Incorporated started up in 2003 in Evergreen, east of Kalispell. President and CEO Terry Kramer says his company handles commercial, heavy industrial projects mainly, as well as large residential or multi-use projects. Kramer says they do have some projects in the Flathead, a $1 million restaurant and a $100,000 office remodel. But compare that to a multi-year commercial project in North Dakota that will tally more than $20 million.
We actually kind of would like to not have to work over there, but it's almost too hard to turn down.
Some of the things Kramer's company has built over in Dickinson, North Dakota, include office buildings, office remodels, a restaurant, and protective hail shelters, like industrial carports to protect fleets of work truck from North Dakota's wind and weather.
So we have kind of two clients over there, developers we work for and oil companies. And we're kind of staying picky that way. We know our market. We know who our clients are. And because each one of them has a different process administratively. And so our staff in our office, we're pretty efficient with a small staff, doesn't have to learn 10 different processes because it's pretty unique.
Kramer says he has 10 employees, including office staff.
Just in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we hired 4 new employees. And that's just, most of that was field employees.
Field employees include project superintendents who oversee on-site work and subcontractors, as well as carpenters. Kramer will subcontract for electrical, plumbing, roofing, heavy site work, and paving. He says they can have as many as 30 subcontractors working for them on a project.
Some of our subcontractors that were working here in that 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 are now gone completely, and we're using them because their offices are now in North Dakota. And there's the guys that we've known for years, and actually one of the concrete companies we work over there, his volume, he went from a decent-sized contractor here to a multi-million dollar a year concrete company in North Dakota. He's not coming back until he retires.
Kramer says during the lean years, they cut field staff positions, but not office staff. Prior to the recession, Kramer's company worked along the Western Corridor from the Flathead south to Hamilton. He says they've had to make several changes because of the job sites now being a 10-hour drive away. Kramer Enterprises bought a house in Dickinson for employees to stay at while working out of town. They buy many materials locally and ship them over to North Dakota. And coordinating these logistics plus any issues or changes on the construction site has led to a big investment in new technology to streamline and integrate paperwork as well as keep connected.
Without technology right now, the increase in technology, it would be very difficult for us to have a good handle on our projects. We happen to use iPads and iPhones because we can FaceTime with the guys. If they have an issue, they just call us on FaceTime. They physically walk us through and show us what is going on, and it's almost like us being in the field with them.
Kramer says his company's lowest volume was in 2012. 2013, he says things turned around, but that was because nearly three-quarters of the work they were doing was out of his North Dakota office.
In the construction industry, we all expect it to be cyclical. Just a downturn was a little bit worse than what I think a lot of people expected. I mean, we always tell our employees, our carpenters and that, I mean, you're going to North Dakota, making a lot of money over there, put it away. We don't know what next spring's going to bring. We don't know what this winter's going to bring.
Kramer says ultimately they'd like to be back working the Western Corridor, and more jobs are picking up along their old stomping grounds. He says it would take 2 years of steady work in the West for that shift back home to happen. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Officials in Jefferson County released the name of a 20-year-old Canadian man who died last week in a wrong-way crash on Interstate 15 north of Butte. The Sheriff's Department tells the Montana Standard that Samuel Keaton Williams of Standoff, British Columbia, died in the crash last Thursday. The Montana Highway Patrol says Williams was traveling northbound in a southbound lanes just before 3 a.m. when he lost control of his car. It struck a contrary median and overturned. His passenger, a 15-year-old boy from Arizona, survived the crash.
Local officials in Park County have scheduled a meeting to reconsider a plan that would enable children of Yellowstone National Park employees to continue to be educated in Montana. The meeting is set for July 21st in Cody. For decades, the federal government paid for the few dozen youngsters in Mammoth Hot Springs in northern Wyoming to attend school in nearby Gardner, Montana. Now federal officials say they shouldn't have been making those payments. Wyoming officials have promised to pick up the tab, but that would require the Powell School District to redraw its boundaries to include northern Yellowstone. The Powell Tribune reports local officials who initially endorsed the plan now want to be reassured they won't have to pay back the previous cost of educating the students.
And now for tonight and tomorrow's forecast for our listening area. West of the Divide tonight will be mostly clear with lows in the 40s to lower 50s. Wednesday should remain mostly sunny with highs in the upper 80s to mid-90s. In central Montana tonight, we'll see clear skies with lows in 45 to 50. On Wednesday, more sun is expected with highs 75 to 85. In southwest Montana tonight should be clear with lows 45 to 50. Wednesday, look for sunny skies with a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. And now for the editorial comments of Al Smith.
The U.S. Supreme Court entered its term yesterday with a bang, again. We've just seen the Hobby Lobby case that grants some corporate entities the right to religious freedom under the First Amendment. I'm not sure that many people who decried the courts granting personhood rights to corporate entities for political campaign spending in Citizens United saw this one coming. You could kind of understand a corporation speaking through its wallet, but a corporation gaining personhood to express a religious tenet based on the belief of its majority owners? That one is much harder to fathom, even given its supposed restriction to so-called closely held corporations. I know there are lots of folks out there poo-pooing any concern that this is a slippery slope to ever more corporate protections as they gain more and more rights as persons. But we've gone from a railroad corporation surreptitiously being granted personhood status in the 1870s to a corporation speaking with wads of cash in political campaigns in 2010 to now a corporation being granted, under the statute enacted by Congress, to give life to the free exercise clause of the First Amendment, the same rights as individual humans to exercise the firmly held religious beliefs of the majority owners. Now, Congress could go in and change the statute to reflect what most who voted for it thought, that it applied only to individuals or religious institutions, not to for-profit corporations. But it seems that the corporation as a person genie is already out of the bottle. What's that old saying? You're not paranoid if someone really is out to get you? With an ever-increasing body of law granting corporations ever more rights that we once thought were given only to real flesh and blood humans, why shouldn't corporations keep testing the lengths the court will go in protecting them? What's next? Corporate taxpayers being granted the right to vote in local elections? The number of votes they get commensurate with their monetary position in the community? Why shouldn't corporations get to vote in elections where issues like zoning affect their bottom line more than it does homeowners? With the current Supreme Court session done, it's helpful to remember that Friday is Independence Day, the day we celebrate our Declaration of Independence from England. Most of us remember our grievances that led to the American Revolution as being against King George. What most of us don't remember or never learned was that many of our grievances were with King George carrying out the bidding of the few corporations that dominated colonial America, like the East India Company, the original Tea Partiers through Company Tea in Boston Harbor. In 1776, we declared our independence not only from British rule, but also from the corporations of England that dominated and controlled us and extracted wealth from us. After securing independence, our founders set out to form a governing structure. They tried governing our new country under the Articles of Confederation, but found that a system of strong state powers and relatively weaker federal powers didn't work well. Present Tea Party rhetoric ignores the founders' recognition of this failure, just as it ignores the failure of the states' rights mantra of the Confederacy. In 1787, our Constitution was adopted to be ratified by the states in 1789 with the assurance that a Bill of Rights would be proposed and ratified, and those first 10 amendments were ratified in 1791. One of the rights insisted upon in order to assure passage of our Constitution was the right to trial by jury in civil matters, the Seventh Amendment. It is the means by which we hold our government accountable. It also ensures that all men and women are entitled to a redress for wrongs done by others, including corporations. As John Adams once said about jury trials, we have not envisioned a better fortification from being ridden like horses, fleeced like sheep, worked like cattle, and fed like hounds. One of the court's end-of-the-session decisions, the Illinois Home Healthcare Workers Union case, Harris, reminded me of the above Adams quote. While there was not a corporation involved in the case, it was brought with the help of corporate-backed right-to-group work groups. While the decision was narrowly drawn, it is an assault on unions, those entities that prevent workers from being ridden like horses and worked like cattle. There is more than a bit of irony that as we celebrate our independence this year, we are experiencing ever more of the corporate dominance that we rebelled against at our nation's birth. Our country's founders retained a healthy fear of the threats posed by corporate power, and sparingly granted corporations a limited business role. As Thomas Jefferson said, I hope we shall crush in its birth the aristocracy of our moneyed corporations, which dare already to challenge our government in a trial of strength and bid defiance to the laws of our country. The moneyed interests of corporate power have been chafing at the reins of government, the civil justice system, and the right to trial by jury since our country's inception. It's going to be hot and dry out there. Please heed all fire warnings and have a safe and happy 4th. is Al Smith for the Montana Trial Lawyers.
Al Smith is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Thanks for listening. And please join Edwin O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.